Hi, everybody. Welcome to Port of Astoria Board of Commissioners in a regular session. We're calling to order on July 2nd, 2024. It is 4 p.m. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Hill.
Here.
Commissioner Spence.
Here.
Commissioner Roan.
Here.
Commissioner Campbell.
Here.
And Commissioner Stevens.
Here. Would you please join me for our pledge of allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our first item is with pleasure that I announce that we are going to elect officers for the fiscal year 2024-25. This will be a voice vote in public for the record. I don't need any seconds for nominations, but Deanna will keep a list of nominations and who nominated. After that, we will conduct the voice vote. You may go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to introduce the majority vote for the commissioners, as they said, and leave the commission in this position.
Thank you. Commissioner Roan?
I don't have any.
Commissioner Spence?
I nominate Commissioner Campbell to be treasurer.
Let's do the chairman first, please.
I just nominated everybody.
I think if I interpret what you said, you want to keep the slate the way it is now.
Yes.
From chairman to assistant secretary, is that correct?
That's correct.
Do we have other nominations? Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Congratulations, Mr. Chairman.
Let me say this. Vice Chairman, it's going to stay the same. That would be Commissioner Spence. Secretary, I forget who that is.
Mr. Hill.
That's right. Okay, that's going to remain the same. Treasurer would remain Commissioner Campbell, and the most difficult job of all, Assistant Secretary, goes to Commissioner Roan. Okay, we'll keep that in place. Commission reports, Commissioner Hill.
I don't have anything this evening.
Okay, Commissioner Smith.
Last Friday we had a visit from the Norwegian Jewel cruise ship here. Couple interesting things. First of all, to have a cruise ship in the middle of summer is a rarity. Usually you get them in the spring going to Alaska, in the fall coming back. What is also interesting is that the Norwegian Jewel left Vancouver, British Columbia, and Astoria was the first stop in the States on its way to San Francisco. Now, what's interesting is last spring, Customs and Border Patrol raised the flag that they wanted us to buy electronic screening equipment for $100,000 plus pay the salary of three customs agents to run it, which we rejected. Evidently, the ship came in Friday with no problems, even though it also left Vancouver, British Columbia, foreign port, and was the first stop here. And from all indications, no complaints, everything went smoothly. So evidently, they worked out the process to do any type of clearing on board prior to arriving to the first stateside. So.
How many passengers?
I'm glad. It's 2,300 was what it shows capacity. A little bit less than that, but it was talking with the head of the cruise hosts that handle cruise passengers when they arrive here at the port. Everything went smoothly, the shuttles worked, the book tours, everything went smoothly.
Thank you. Commissioner Rowan, anything to add?
I don't.
Mr. Campbell?
I have nothing.
My prepared comments are to congratulate the new chairman and provide my grateful thanks to the support that was provided during the last year by staff and all the commissioners. I still need to say that. I mean, it was a good year, and we got a lot done, and I wouldn't be able to do it without the advice and the whispering in my ear when we had things come up that I didn't anticipate. So thank you very much, and thank you also for your confidence to leave me here for another year. I don't know how much of this I can stand to enjoy, but I will continue on. Thank you very much. Those are all my comments. Are there any changes or additions to the agenda?
What, I guess, question of staff, of the resolution, at what point will that be approved, which outlines all of the officers and responsibility for everyone in the administration for the next year?
That's on your agenda, action item 9B.
9B, oh good, thank you.
Yeah, we got to do all that housekeeping today.
Okay.
During this meeting. Are there any changes or additions to the agenda? Hearing none, we'll move along. Public comment. This is for items on the agenda when not covered by a public hearing. This is an opportunity to speak to the commission for 3 minutes regarding any item on the agenda. Public comment received by deadline will be read aloud at the meeting. Do we have any comments, Deanna?
No comments.
Thank you. Item 8 is the consent calendar, which will include the meeting minutes from the budget committee, meeting minutes from the regular session June 4th, financials for May 2024, and the event calendar. Consent calendar means we can, with a single vote, approve all of those routine items.
I move we approve item 8A, B, C of the consent calendar.
I'm a second.
There's a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Approved unanimously. Here for action items now. Our first action item is commission committee assignments for 2024-25. That would be on page 17. And we can use the same organization and commission membership as in the current committee assignments, or if you want to change things around, let's go ahead and make some suggestions.
I'm very satisfied with my assignment, Mr. Commissioner.
Okay. Mr. Campbell?
I think I'm okay with mine. Tim Mill and I have the airport and a few things together. I guess I could put up with him for that. A little bit of time for spending.
How if I don't?
Okay. Mr. Hill?
I'm going to say this. Please understand, I do it humbly. I really appreciate being on the CEDAR committee. However, depending on the meeting environment and the move from the country club down to Seaside, I just have a horrible time hearing in those rooms. It depends on the voice, it depends on the difference of the rooms, and a lot of Zoom, which is just absolutely horrendous. The timing of the voice on the screen is off 20 and 30 seconds sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so I feel that, man, I'm not the right guy to have on that committee because I just sit there and go.
All right, that's fair.
Have no clue what they're talking about.
Any other commissioners burdened with desire to be the representative for the Clatsop Economic Development Resources?
Right.
I'll do it if he doesn't want to do it.
I know Dirk really enjoyed that.
It is really an incredible organization.
I think it is too.
So I just felt like some other commissioner should have that opportunity.
Yes, sir.
I really enjoy driving.
We're going to put Commissioner Roan in place of Commissioner Hill for CDAR.
Thank you. I'll miss it, but I did miss it.
And Commissioner Roan, are you pleased with the rest of it?
I'm very pleased. Very pleased, yes.
All right. So am I. We can leave all the others the same. We need a voice vote on that.
No move.
Okay. So Campbell says we do.
I think it's five.
Technically, the commission president does the committee assignment, so that would be up to you.
That's you by decree.
Yeah. That's what I mean by helping me out. Thank you. So those are the assignments. Next is our resolution 2024-04, making business appointments and authorizations. This is an annual event that we have to authorize. That's on page 18. And it'll look familiar to you.
Mr. Chair?
This will be a resolution, yes, sir.
I move we approve resolution 2024-04, making business appointments and authorizations.
Do we need to fill in the blanks as?
They're already listed.
On pages 18, you'll see them listed. And all we need to do is
get a second discussion and a vote.
And we can have a discussion.
You got a second.
All right. Discussion.
So when the resolution is finalized, the names of each commissioner for each of the positions will be included.
Yes, that is correct. And everything else here is going to stay the same unless there's someone who wants to suggest a change. And we've got a motion on the floor for keeping it as is. And a second. Any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Unanimously approved. And continuing the housekeeping, we have a letter of engagement for the audit firm Talbot, Terada, and Warwick LLP. And that would be page 21. That would be to keep our audit firm under contract with us. And they have done good work for us.
I have one complaint, though.
Go ahead.
We've had them. I haven't seen any interviews with any of the commissioners.
I have.
And have you seen it?
Yes.
I haven't.
The check usually is contacted and asked.
Yeah, they normally interview the commissioners during the process, or at least a couple of them.
Yeah. They've done that. They talked to the chair.
Well, it's a lot of times governments hire auditing firms in packages of 3 years and 5 years. Where are we? How many years do we have? And do we solicit after 3 or 5 years?
So the port doesn't have a policy on the books for the time frame in which we would go out for any other proposal. We've had TKW for quite some time. Don't quote me on this, but I think it's roughly 7 years that they've been the auditor of record. I think prior to them, the port had Moss Adams, who had also served the port for a long time. And it's not uncommon. This is similar to like legal services, where if entities are generally happy with the services being provided, it's not uncommon to stick with an entity. I will say that in working with TKW, they're one of the better audit firms I've worked with. The partner who's been out here and typically gives the presentation at year end, Julie Fahey, is excellent with communication, which you don't often see from audit firms. It tends to be a bunch of numbers and accounting nerds who have a tough time sort of translating the work they're doing to how it affects management. And I think that I would recommend that we continue with TKW. We also, and I don't have the exact number, but the price that they charge, I know when we had gone out for audit proposals in the past, some of those are really expensive, even up into the six-figure range, which for an entity our size just does not make a lot of sense. And the other thing I know that's a problem in this area, it's a problem throughout the state, is just the lack of qualified auditors, where a lot of audits now aren't getting done before December 31st. They're having to file for extensions. As the commission's aware, I serve on the school board out at Napa. This year, we didn't get our audit report until April for the year that ended June of the prior year. And that's not uncommon. And so TKW, they seem to always work with our schedule. I know when Melanie had to be out for an extended period of time, they were very workable to trying to work around that schedule and make things work and still hit deadlines. So I don't see any substantive reason that we would make a change here. And I think the relationship has been built to the point that they're able to come in and be pretty efficient with the audit. Part of it is when you bring in a new auditor, there's a learning curve to figuring out the systems, the processes, that once they've gone through it a few times, they can do things much quicker, much more efficiently.
I'm glad to hear that. And
they give us an estimate on their costs.
Melanie, do you have the cost number?
Yeah, it's in the document. I believe it's roughly $50,000. Page 24, $52,100.
What page is that?
24.
There it is. Okay. I'm on this for this near the bottom.
Here it is.
Okay, so let's hear a motion to continue this contract with.
So moved.
Second. Comment. I appreciate the director's experience with them. He was around, as some of us were, over 8 years ago when the finances and the port situation was in chaos. And it took two different auditing firms 2 years to straighten out our books, so it's good to have a good first-class auditing firm, and they have proven their worth and their value. So I support the motion completely.
Thank you. Further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
And one footnote to that vote, which is unanimous. Before I was chairman, I was contacted about 3 years ago by TKW, just a routine query of commissioners, not just the chairman. So they do pulse the chairman, maybe on a random basis. Okay. Our next item is our final vote on the Boatyard Master Plan. Mr. Director.
So we have Walt Foster called in here.
The what, I'm sorry?
We should have. Has Walt Foster logged on to the Zoom?
Just Tom, no.
I wonder if they're having trouble getting in. Yeah, true. Just 1 second here. We should have Seth from Mall Foster.
Okay.
You know, we've been having intermittent internet issues here. Hopefully he can get in.
Okay.
All
We need to remove this to send the invitation again, see if maybe he has the wrong one. I don't think he does though, but.
Hello.
Hey.
Okay. Want to send that over to him again? Okay. Yeah, we'll send it over again. Okay. On the way. Okay, thanks.
While we wait here, and talk a little bit about the process. This was obviously a topic that we had on the advisory calendar last month, and something that we've been working on for quite some time, as a follow-up to the feasibility study that BST had completed for the port. Since our meeting last month, we did have a chance to meet with both Commissioner Stevens and Commissioner Campbell, and our consultant on the master plan, Mal Foster, to have a good discussion, answer some questions. And I think a couple of the important points that we discussed that I think are important for the community to know is that as in its entirety, some of the infrastructure goals are very aspirational, and there's some high dollar items involved with the plan, which I think was, you know, at first met with some concern from some commissioners about how in the world are we going to pull this off. There were additional concerns I know Commissioner Campbell had raised about the usage of space and possibly preserving some space in the event of some sort of an emergency or emergent opportunity. And so the phased approach that Mal Foster set forth, I think, is really important. And the early phases of the master plan, I think, are a lot more digestible in terms of the capacity of the port to get some of these things done. The first phase also are some of the things that we heard the loudest from the users of the boatyard as we went through this process about what some of the needs were for infrastructure, for indoor workspace. And then as we go through and accomplish some of these things, similar to how, you know, to me a year ago, the dollars that were floating around for Pier 2 were also sort of so large that you couldn't imagine being able to pull something like that off. And I think what we've talked a lot about is it's important to kind of set a high bar, set really high goals to achieve. And I think if we're successful as we implement the first phase of the project, I think it's going to be a lot more likely that we're going to get support for phases in the future. I've talked about it a lot, but in my time as executive director, I think you could make a good case that amongst the different businesses and industries we're involved with, the largest success story has been the boatyard. I just got a report from our finance director, Melanie, here a couple weeks ago, talking about kind of same month, year over year, looking at revenues. And if you compare our revenues in May of 24 with that of May of 19, so just 5 years prior, and also prior to the pandemic, our revenues have increased about 280%, which is pretty wild, because that's increase in volumes without really infrastructure expansion. And I think it speaks a lot, particularly to our team out there, led by Brendan, the boatyard manager. And so we know, as we've gone through this process and we've heard from users, we've heard from the public that there's a huge desire. We've been hit up by a number of individuals interested in development at our boatyard. They'd like to see this thing get moving as quickly as possible. So I think it's an exciting time. It's something that's been really well vetted and well thought out. This isn't some sort of a knee-jerk reaction. And then kind of zooming out in terms of looking at the global view of the port, one of the things that that I think became really apparent when we lost our log export business back in 2019 and what that meant for the port and the impact, this idea of having a diversified revenue stream across our waterfront, I think is really important. And so by expanding the boatyard, obviously with the seafood cluster we have on Pier 2 and the complete rehab project we have moving forward, with now a smaller but I think much more efficient log operation going on here on Pier 1, I think there's real opportunity in the future for the port revenue wise, and we've mitigated the risk side of the equation to the greatest extent possible. So I guess with that, is Seth on now? Mm-hmm. Seth, can you hear us?
I can, thanks. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Loud and clear.
Great. Good afternoon.
So we've been talking as we were waiting for you to log in, just kind of high level about the process, where we are today, the phased approach that the master plan is based on, the discussions that we had last week with a couple of our commissioners answering some questions. Hopefully alleviating some concerns. Did you have any additional comments?
I don't believe that I have anything additional beyond the information that's included in the draft pre-final plan that's in front of the commissioners right now. And through the discussion that we had last week, I feel like the concerns were shared, and I'm hopeful that they were in part assuaged through that conversation, or at least sufficiently addressed to clarify that what's proposed here is a phased plan over a period of, phase one is anticipated within 2 years, phases two and three and 5 to 10 years, and then on from there. So, the port isn't committing to a full build-out of this master plan, from the date of approval. This is a guideline that hopefully will direct decision-making, inform decision-making and financing decisions as you move forward to expand operations at the boatyard, meeting the demonstrated demand that was apparent in the market study and through a lot of the conversations that we had with business operators and vendors, boat owners, and others that make frequent use of the boatyard. This plan allows for expansion of services, space for independent owners and operators to work on their boats and undercover, which was a high concern, and it allows for vendors that serve the DIY boat community to locate and to take advantage of the presence of England Marine just across the street, and then future potential marine serving businesses and industry in an expansion to the southwest. I think we've been over a lot of the primary proposed improvements to the boatyard, but again, to emphasize, the short-term changes really augment and help reinforce the existing uses on the property and help facilitate DIY boat maintenance there. Future improvements out to the north end of the pier would really ramp up and grow those operations to serve much larger commercial, potentially recreational vehicles, but primarily commercial fishing and other operators with a larger 400 metric ton lift. But that decision isn't made today. It's just recommended based on the input that we received from key stakeholders and what was indicated as a potentially financially feasible option in the market study report. This doesn't lock the port into precluding other uses as the market changes or as other opportunities arise down the line. So I'll end it there. I'm happy to take questions. If there's any other points that you'd like me to hit, let me know.
Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
I'm going to make a motion to approve the Boatyard Master Plan.
I have a motion and a second. Discussion.
I'd like to discuss.
Yes.
I think it's been a lengthy, deliberate process involving community stakeholders. And we've heard nothing but success stories about the Boatyard. And when I came on the commission, there was some issues the state had with the port for not having a master plan for returning money, among other missteps. And to me, the critical importance of having a well-defined plan is that it creates a definition for applying for grants and getting assistance from outside the community. I think the deputy director, Matt McGrath, at one point said, success follows success. If we are successful, then we can expect to be follow that with more success. So I view that the master plan creating enough definition to allow us to start down that path, and fully in support of it. I believe also our community can be divided on many issues, and I think the Boatyard in serving the region in that capacity is something that is something everyone can support.
May I say something? I'm a little embarrassed that this happened, but since I retired, I haven't been around the Boatyard like earlier years type of thing. Spent more time out at Tongue Point, literally. The other day, I went to sign some checks for Melanie, and then left, I said, I'm going to just stop over at the Boatyard, and I do that all the time from my car, but I decided to walk through the Boatyard. I was shocked what I saw in that place. The size of boats, I don't know how they got some of those boats out of there with that little travel lift, but the number of boats and the amount of energy and work being done there was double, triple anything I'd ever seen before. Like I say, I was embarrassed that this is new news. You guys know. And 280% increase and so on. So anyway, I'm so excited about the potential. And a stepped phase makes all the sense in the world. And dirt, success breeds success is a good way to look at that. So anyway, I'll tell you, if you haven't seen what's going down there, and then let alone you have a world-class England Marine right here at the Boatyard, holy smoke, it's set up for success. And I just wanted to say how proud I am of the way things have gone.
With the staff at two.
Hopefully to be increasing soon.
Anyone else? Further discussion? All in favor of approving the Boatyard Master Plan, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Boatyard Master Plan passes unanimously. We have the next item of public comment. This is for non-agenda items. This is an opportunity to speak to the Commission for 3 minutes regarding port concerns not on the agenda. Public comment received by the deadline will be read aloud. You have any public comment?
No comments.
That's well. Okay. Executive Director comments.
please.
Thank you, Commissioner. So to kick this off, I thought I'd give Matt the opportunity to give a debrief on his trip to Denmark.
Wonderful, wonderful Copenhagen.
Copenhagen, yeah. So as the commission knows, I went to Denmark from June 9th through the 15th as part of an industrial symbiosis tour that was held by the Center for Sustainable Infrastructure. This is an organization started by Rees Roth a number of years ago with the sole intent of trying to get industry together so that we can start working well with one another and really taking waste streams from one industry, agriculture, whatever it is, and using that as resources for another. So just to back up a little bit, the reason that the port was approached for this is a couple of reasons. One was that we're in the middle of looking at developing the airport industrial park, and so that was one of the reasons. But the primary reason was Pier 2 West. As we're starting to get into the construction of the facility and getting into the design, and as we've contemplated putting in a BRC, or a byproduct recovery center, we looked at the options, and so Melanie Olson had approached me and said, hey, might want to go and be part of this tour, because when it comes to industrial symbiosis or industry working together to really help one another and to maximize efficiency, minimize energy use and those types of things, Denmark really does kind of set the tone in Europe and is considered a world leader in that. So went over with roughly about 30 different people. So there was five different Oregon State representatives. You had three county commissioners, a number of people from Business Oregon, Chris Cummings, Deputy Director, Melanie Olson, Jeff Hampton was also there, also Chris Nemrol from Fort George Brewery, Amy from Amy Wentworth from Pacific Coast Seafoods, and then even Lisa Middlesdorf was the executive director from the Port of Morrow, some of the people that were there. So I guess one of the things to do is to back out a little bit and say, you know, why Denmark, and put this in a little bit of context. But Denmark is a relatively small country. I mean, its entire borders will fit inside Oregon's borders. And so there's only maybe a million more people in Denmark than there are in Oregon completely. But I think that one of the reasons that they've become so efficient at so many of these things is because of the need to be efficient in so many of these things. And so when we started going around and looking at how their processes work and how their industrial parks work, how their municipalities work, and how they really bring people together, it's a little heartening and disheartening at the same time, because you realize that they are about 50 years ahead of where the United States is right now as far as infrastructure. When you look at the energy they consumed basically in 1970s, 1980s versus their gross domestic product, they are using about 40% less energy than they were 50 years ago, and they're producing twice as much. So one of the things that really did was, to me, it was a bit of a paradigm shift, is realizing that you can have those things be divergent. You can produce more while consuming less. And so going to these different ports, Esbjerg and other places, you realize that they think on a different level. So when they get these industrial parks together, they will really team finding the right industry, the right agriculture to be in the same area that can feed, these industries can feed off of one another and also benefit the community. So one of the things that they do is called district heating. So where we have all different types of heat, we have natural gas, we have, you know, central HVACs, we've got all these different types of things. Near every home over in Denmark is radiant heating, and it is all done by industrial park use. And so what happens is, if you have heat that is being produced through these industrial processes, that water is routed to 25, 50, 100,000 homes within this region, within this district, and is utilized so that their energy consumption is it's minimal. And it's interesting because most of the people over in Denmark have an app that shows when energy is being produced and when's the best time to plug in your car, when's the best time to do these types of things. And so one of the things that they're doing now, and it's a little different than here, is that, you know, the North Sea is basically turning into a wind farm. So they're doing a lot of wind energy. And wind energy, they're doing it in such a way that they are not using a lot of battery storage. So their energy production is intermittent. And, you know, this is a little different from our area and what we're dealing with here, because, you know, obviously we have some concerns like, hey, what are we going to be doing with these valuable fishing grounds? How is wind energy going to potentially affect that? Their fishing industry was decimated many, many years ago. And so their fishing production is much lower. And so the North Sea has really turned into this huge energy production area. So again, and when you're looking at how these industries function together, one of the really interesting examples to me was Arla, which is their biggest dairy in Denmark. And when you looked at their, or when they were looking at their initial production of milk and cheese, they said, well, you know, we're having these byproducts and these kind of waste products, and they were having to get rid of them, and it was costing them a lot of money. So they started working with these other companies to find out how they could potentially use this whey product and these other these byproducts of what their processes were. And what they found out was their waste products was worth more than the milk and the cheese that they were producing. So now what their focus is the waste product rather than the milk and cheese. The milk and cheese is actually more of an afterthought, because most of their revenue is coming from the waste product. So it really is an amazing culture, and when you see the difference, you know. And of course, I'm going to Esbjerg, and they're showing us a lot of the construction that they're doing. And so they take us to the top of a five-story building and say, hey, look out over here, and here's kind of the North Sea over here, and this is the new construction project that we've got going. And I said, okay, so where's the construction line? Like, when did this new land get created? So we just did this within the last year. And I said, so you know, how far was that? And so he points back so far. And I said, okay, so you put all of this new land into that area that borders, into that water that borders the North Sea? Yeah. I says, what's the acreage on that? I don't know. And I went back and looked at basically what their new area was, and they put about 30 new acres of land in the water. And so, you know, my immediate thought goes to DEQ and goes to all these things, like, how in the world could we possibly do that? So, again, I go back to, it was heartening and disheartening all at the same time, because the first rule is like, okay, if we're going to do some incredible things, we actually have to push forward and believe that they can be done. And then the second thing is just we're going to need to get some people over to Denmark and to get them to change their line of thinking to make sure that they understand that these things are possible. So one of the things I talked with Reese Roth at length about when I was over there is that, you know, it really is impressive to go over and see how they collaborate and these industries and agriculture get together, and they're not holding things close to the chest. They want to make sure that what they're doing is going to be symbiotic in the sense that it is serving everybody well, that everybody is going to win from this. And so what I impressed upon Reese was that he needs to get some people over from DEQ, at least find some people there that have not completely gone over to the dark side, and see if they can be persuaded that these are tenable tenets, that we can really move things forward in this way. And I also found it very interesting that I had to go to Denmark to meet Amy from Pacific Coast Seafoods, and I had to go to Denmark to meet Chris over at Fort George. But and one of the things that's been really good about the trip is the different connections. There's so many different people that have so much influence in all the different areas, whether it's industry, whether it's lawmakers, whether it's county commissioners, you know, different port directors. So it was really good to be able to connect with all of those folks. So, you know, it's one of those things that as I step back, when you're taking these trips and spend that time, always ask yourself, was it worth it? Or was it worth the time? And I would say, absolutely, it is worth the time. And I would encourage the commission to look at CSI, the Center for Sustainable Infrastructure, and see what they're doing with this industrial symbiosis, how they have worked together with Denmark. People from Denmark are very open with this information. They've come over, they've given presentations to people up in Seattle, and it is interesting to me that Denmark, though it is a very small country, they didn't really look to missionize or change the world. They were just looking to change Denmark And as they've done that, the world has come to Denmark to say, hey, how have you done this? So a lot of good information, a lot of great contacts, and a lot of humbling experience as far as, you know, where they are with their infrastructure and how we might follow suit. So with that.
Appreciate that. Does anybody have any questions for Matt?
Kind of. You know, Melanie Olson, you said, asked you to go. So to me, she's already wise to that phenomenon of that maybe that there's, I guess, dealing with an adversarial relationship between regulators and regulated. And somehow there's an opportunity there to say, hey, you can create better outcomes of what you're trying to regulate working with the regulated. Seems like that could be an example where you could say, this is what we're trying to do, and this is where it's done and how it's done.
Yeah, and one of the things that, that Reese brought up during the meeting, or during the, you know, some of these meetings, was that initially it was intended that this trip was going to be all legislators. And they had to fall off on that, and so it ended up with a really good mix of industry and legislators and commissioners and people from the state. And because of that, he said it was a much better group. It was just, you know, people had different mindsets and they were able to share ideas. And no one was offended by anything. It really was, it was remarkable how well everybody got along and how well everybody was at least open to different ideas. So, but yeah, to your comments, Commissioner Rohn, I think Melanie is in Business Oregon. They are all aware of that, and you know, our goal with this was to come back and to really start pushing to get people onto this symbiotic train, if you would, just to have us think in a different way and to make sure that we're able to come together as industry and the port and make sure that we're doing these things as efficiently as possible.
Is our new environmental officer getting folded into this kind of thinking?
Absolutely.
Good.
Thank you. That was great to hear.
So then I just had a few more quick updates here. One piece of info we just got this morning, actually, and I know the commission has asked about this at times, but Tom Wardman from the Schooler Company was in town this morning, and his both he and his general manager, Chase Wilson, had reported that they've really been ramping up production over there. He said just since May, they've done 100 million pounds of fish waste. Or sorry, 1 million, like a presidential candidate here, I can't read my notes. and 200,000 pounds in the last week. So that was good news to hear that that things are up and running, and sounds like they're doing pretty good volume over there. Speaking of DEQ, we have officially filed our appeal on the enforcement notice that we had received. Be heading to Portland to their office July 17th to have an enforcement meeting. So we've been doing some preparations to get ready for that. I do, and I mentioned it earlier, but I do appreciate the article that the Astorian put out. I thought Rebecca presented a really balanced and informative perspective on what's going on there, and so we'll see how that proceeds. But I think there's actually a quote in the paper that, at least from my perspective, you know, our goal is to really move this thing forward and find long-term solutions, and we're hoping that DEQ is willing to partner with us on that to move this thing forward. And I'm just not sure how at this point a financial penalty in any way moves us closer to that end goal. So that will be July 17th, and I will report back to the commission as I know more on that. Matt and I had the chance late last week to meet with two members of PNWA, their executive director, Neil Manu, as well as their government relations director, Gina Horton, were here in town. And so they were here for another event, actually, but we had lunch with them and were able to discuss a number of topics. Specifically, actually, the boatyard and dredging were two of the things that we were trying to strategize how PNWA, who's more of a regional player, could provide some support to our port on that. So it was good to get a chance to see them in a space other than Washington, D.C., because that's typically where we see them the most. And then a couple quick ones here. Calendar update. I think on your calendars it still has July 10th being a finance committee meeting. That meeting has been postponed, so we will not be meeting next Wednesday. The port office will be closed for the 4th of July. Just as an FYI, I have asked that we have more of our security staff scheduled to work that afternoon and evening. I know like our East Basin parking lot is a popular spot for folks to hang out and watch the fireworks in Astoria. And so we will be providing security down there. I know Matt Hansen's been working with APD as well. Obviously, 4th of July is a very busy time for them. And so I think we're all set up to handle the increased activity for that afternoon and evening. And then as the commission's aware, and now you can see that we've already started to move, it's pretty barren here, but our maintenance team is working feverishly to get the commission chambers at the Gateway building all ready to go. We did have a bit of a delay in the lease for, it's, I don't know how to pronounce this, I think it's, is it Theriot LLC? It's a chiropractic practice that's going to be coming in here. And actually, initially, we were going to start with a month-to-month. It looks like now, due to some issues they're having with financing for some of the tenant improvements, they would like a longer-term lease, which I think we're fine with. But that's actually going to be coming to the commission at the next meeting. So that will be on the commission agenda for July 16th. So it may be that we actually meet in this room one last time on July 16th. And then I think the lease is going to commence probably in the days following that meeting, if approved by the commission. But the room over there, it's right next to my office, and it's starting to look really good. And I think it's going to be a good space. We are kind of with today's day and age and doing a Zoom call with the in-person meeting, looking at some infrastructure for audio and video. I know the port's not alone in this. I've been to a lot of different public meetings where there's problems with either hearing folks that are calling in or vice versa, and so we're trying to make sure that we have a good solution for that, because I don't think this requirement is going away anytime soon to have a virtual option for our meeting. So kind of a to be determined for that meeting on the 16th, but I think it's likely that we would have one more meeting here and the new tenant would take over in the days following. So, oh, and Logship, July 6th. Logship coming in July 6th.
How many loads do they got stacked out here?
Oh, I don't know.
At least two, huh?
Yeah. A lot of toothpicks.
Maybe three loads.
Yeah, I don't know how many board feet they have.
They're going to have a quick turnaround. It's a lot of logs.
Yeah.
Good. Your Lord and Savior, like Donald Trump, might shut it down with a
terrorist. I don't think so. I think we're going to start pumping oil and gas.
Thank you, Director. Our upcoming meeting dates, we will have a workshop session on July 16th. And you just heard the advertisement. It's very likely it will be in this room. And then a regular session, August 6th, for both are at 4 p.m. With nothing else, this adjourns the meeting.